I'm Dion Kirby, and this is When I Got Here, Untold Immigrant Stories, a podcast from Literacy Achieves. At Literacy Achieves, we provide English literacy programs for immigrant and refugee families in Dallas, Texas. Our students come to us from all over the world. We celebrate them and what they bring to our country. When I Got Here tells stories of immigrant journeys to the United States.
I'm Byron Harris. We may know the poem better than the preamble to the Constitution. It goes like this. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So say the words mounted on the base of the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, whose upraised hand holds a torch. Lady Liberty, for many, symbolizes the welcome the United States has held for immigrants. Immigrants who saw her as they arrived by ocean for decades at nearby Ellis Island. But history reveals the Golden Door is as much a fable as a reality. The United States has, more often than not, discriminated against immigrants.
Remember, the Statue of Liberty, again, is erected without any thought to immigration as a symbol whatsoever. It's a symbol of democracy and of liberty.
Jeffrey Engel is a historian, director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University, and author of more than a dozen books on American history.
And this comes from the French. So even that most precious symbol that we have of immigration is fought over, manipulated, but initially not about welcoming people because we want them here for their better life, but welcoming here because we need them for our society. The Statue of Liberty has nothing to do with immigration at all, except for geography. That is to say, it's placed on the island next to where immigrants arrive. But immigrant groups, because of this fact, subsequently go in and claim it, especially with Emma Lazarus's famous poem. She's a Jewish immigrant from an earlier generation. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. That's not saying that these are good people. That's saying we'll take anybody and transform them into an American. But it's not welcoming in the sense of, it's give me your tired. It's not, please, please, please give me your tired.
Emma Lazarus' poem, The New Colossus, is often seen as a romantic depiction of American immigration. But Jeffrey Engel will tell you that immigrants have rarely been welcomed warmly here. Emma Lazarus came from a wealthy family of Portuguese Jews, not necessarily welcome here. And Jewish immigrants who arrived after Lazarus' family were often not welcomed by the Jews themselves who were already on American soil.
The first premise of any discussion of immigration, the same narrative occurs, which is a new group shows up and is ostracized and is not welcome. And then that's the case until the next new group shows up, who is typically more different than the original group, at which point the first arrival group, if you will, that was ostracized, starts ostracizing the newcomers so that they can get in good with the old folks, if you will. And this happens again and again and again, which is why by the 1890s, when new immigrants, because of advances in travel as much as anything else, when new immigrants started to come from Southern and Eastern Europe, they were seen as weird and slovenly and barbaric. And to be honest, they were very poor, for the most part, so they probably contributed to this stereotype, if you will, and it's particularly interesting in a Jewish context.
Jeffrey Engel speaks as a college history teacher and the historian of his own family, who were Jews from Eastern Europe.
One might think that Jews that were already in the United States were very welcoming to subsequent Jews. It's actually the exact opposite, because the Jews that were typically in the United States before 1890, again, this is typical, not you can find exceptions, but typically were German Jews who are from the upper classes. And they were sort of embarrassed by these other people coming in who were making a bad name for Jews in their opinion, because if they, you know, they didn't speak the language, they didn't speak any real language, they spoke Yiddish, and they were very poor. So there are a series of legislations throughout the 19th century that over time allow people who are of Eastern European and Southern European descent, the same thing for the Italians and the Romanians and so on, and the Poles who come over in this area, allow them to come, but don't exactly give them a warm welcome. So Theodore Roosevelt was more concerned with the immigration that was going on in California, personally, in terms of his own politics. He was deeply involved in keeping the Chinese and then subsequently the Japanese from sending over any immigrants to California. At this time, you couldn't own land in California if you were not white. So Roosevelt actually negotiates a treaty with the Japanese that we will have a gentleman's agreement, they called it, that you will not send any more immigrants to us because we don't want them. And this is actually very painful for Roosevelt personally, because Roosevelt, as a historian, had a deep and profound thought about the hierarchy of human races and the way that human races develop. He knew, for example, who was at the bottom. And it's not hard to figure out who we thought were at the bottom. Most times when you say that in American history, the people on the bottom are African-American. In this period in time, for Roosevelt in particular, the people at the bottom were the Chinese. They were excluded and discriminated against 9 ways to Sunday. My analysis is that there's never a period in American history where we're really embracing immigrants. If you want to come out and settle Wisconsin, feel free. We need people for that, but you're not moving onto my block. I think that there are some economic factors that drive immigration and political factors that drive immigration that are different than the cultural acceptance of immigrants. I actually have a whole list of ethnic slurs that are used throughout history. I don't like to show it to students because they wind up using them. The Irish are a great example. The reason I'm smiling when talking about the Irish is that they are the classic, stereotypical, discriminated against group when they first arrive, especially after during the potato famine. They're arriving into urban settings, and they're arriving dirt poor, and they're Catholic, which is really, really important for this country. They're Papists. So they're considered to be incapable of being good Americans because they're the wrong religion and they don't have the right social mores. And by the way, they are driving down wages. So they're completely discriminated against until the next group shows up. And so the Irish and the way that immigrant groups are treated in the 1840s becomes completely different by the 1870s and 1880s, where the Irish are the backbone in many ways of the Northeastern urban, not elite obviously, but of the working force. You know, the old trope of the Irish cop, that is a phenomenon not of the 1840s, that's a phenomenon of the 1880s and going forward in Chicago, places like that. Obviously, Jews are never welcomed anywhere. I was going to say, in Eastern Europeans in general, I mean, Slavs, I know it's an old-fashioned term, but Slavs and Italians. Interesting thing about Italians, the Italians are weird in that the Italians do much, much more seasonal migration than anybody else during this period. Once it becomes possible to cross the Atlantic in just a week, the Italians all come, not all, many Italians, especially from southern Italy, come over with the expectation that they'll work as field workers or make enough money to come back after a year and buy some land back home. Many of them get trapped by World War I. And so when Poles come over and the Irish come over and Slavs and Jews come over, they come over with the expectation of staying. They're never going to see their homeland again. The typical Italian immigrant was not that. Many came with the intention of staying, but just as many came with the expectation that this is a yearly or bi-yearly traveling.
In the case of Irish immigrants, discrimination was profound, and women were more welcome than men.
The other thing that's interesting is the Irish actually send more women than men. I think if I remember correctly, they're the only European country where that's the case. And the reason actually is, again, this is all economically driven. Men are considered to be economic threats and drive down wages, women have a whole bunch of other areas that they can work in that men can't at the time, including domestics in the household or nurses and things of that nature, jobs that people in this country don't want to do, but they don't want a black person around. They're willing to have an Irish person come in and do it, again, speaking in broad terms. And one way you can track this is I oftentimes ask, in fact, every semester, I ask my students, are the Irish white or black? And they look at me like I'm an idiot, sort of the look you're giving me now. Because, you know, everybody knows Irish people are white. That's a stupid question. And I say, okay, if this was 1840s, you knew that the Irish were black and were coded that way and were described that way and were treated that way. It's only over time that the Irish have gotten whitened. Same thing with Slavs, same thing with Poles, same thing with Jews, same with Italians.
Immigration and American presidential politics, Engel observes, are full of code words. The phrases law and order and silent majority, phrases coined during the Nixon administration, were actually codes designed to appeal to white people who'd been here for a while.
If you're in favor of law and order, Nixon is speaking to the white, primarily Protestant, majority of his voters. Nixon talked about the silent majority. And the words are really, really well constructed. You know, silent, meaning you see all this stuff on TV, you're seeing it on TV because it's crazy. It's not the way most people are living their lives. Most people are like you in the majority, and the majority is white suburban voters, not urban, which is code for black, not necessarily even rural, which is also coded black, but white suburban voters are the majority in the country, Nixon says, and I'm out for you. And there's a whole series of policies that flow from this. You know, this is why the Nixon administration opposed busing for integration purposes and helped enhance the war on crime. Largely for political purposes. I think I've got one memo from Nixon to Pat Buchanan, who's one of his speechwriters, basically saying he didn't care what the progress was on the issue, had to do something with poor people, just make sure everybody knows we're against it.
The period friendliest to immigrants, Engel points out, is the two decades right after World War II, when the economy was booming and the so-called greatest generation held sway.
On a policy level, on a political level, throughout the 19th century in particular, and into the 20th, and then after 1965, there's a great push by policymakers to welcome immigrants because they're needed for the economy in particular and for growth. That doesn't mean they're invited to Thanksgiving. And I think that the American people traditionally have, when they needed economic infusions, have welcomed new bodies. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they welcome them into the body politic. And that's, I think, a significant coded pattern that I see playing out again today as well. We still use the term melting pot in this country, I think less and less. But melting pot goes back to the hyphenated frenzy of the early 20th century. In fact, the Ford Motor Company, which hired a lot of immigrants, and Mr. Ford was very anti-Semitic and anti-ethnic and anti-everything, but he needed workers. They used to have actual ceremonies at their plants where a person who was an immigrant, all the immigrants would line up and they would have a big pot. And the person would climb over a ladder into the pot and then climb out, the idea being you've been cleansed. You become an American. You're in the melting pot. Look, we all went into this pot. Now we're all coming out together. There's lots of flags and lots of hoopla. So that does not tell me that we're welcoming to immigrant culture historically. And I am struck by the fact that when we think about the major symbol of immigration, or at least it used to be, now I suspect it's probably a wall.
America symbolized not by a melting pot, but a wall. That said, history reveals a message to newcomers that is not entirely pessimistic.
The first thing I would tell them is, statistically speaking, on anything you can measure, and also cultural acceptability and status, it's going to be better for your kids. it's going to be hard for you, better for your kids. They'll still face some discrimination, but that their kids will become more integrated and their communities will become more integrated in the American story over time. And that this is a story of generations and decades. The second thing I would tell them is your kids are probably going to be discriminating against the next group. And whatever you can do to try to teach them not to do that would be helpful. Mm. But that doesn't seem to be a lesson that gets through as much as the first lesson.
Although immigrants no longer gain landfall in New York Harbor, see the Statue of Liberty greeting them, and feel that she is here to welcome them, they still come. Physicians, physicists, and engineers still arrive here and end up working menial jobs to gain a foothold in America. They are driven by a hope Lady Liberty has evolved to symbolize.
The hope is real because the opportunity is real. This is a country where you really can have the opportunity to rise up. Doesn't mean you guarantee to, but at least you have a greater opportunity than most places in the world. At the same time, history tells me that each newish group should not expect to have a welcome mat put out for them, but the door is not closed. The people who are coming here because they want to improve their lives are largely going to do so regardless of the warmth of the welcome. I just wish that we would give them a warmer welcome. I hope, because I believe in a very old-fashioned, progressive view of history, that things are getting better, even when there are a few steps back, they're still getting better and bending towards moral justice.
You've been listening to When I Got Here, Untold Immigrant Stories, a production of Literacy Achieves, where we provide English literacy programs for immigrant and refugee families in Dallas. To learn more about our mission and these podcasts, visit our website at literacyachieves.org.